Well, we're talking real science with the real scientist, Don Lincoln. We're going to take your calls with him when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Don Lincoln with us. We'll get to your calls this hour as well. Don, do you think time travel will ever be possible?
Well, you know, time travel to the future works pretty well. We're doing it right now. But, yeah, no, to answer the question, I honestly don't. I mean, you know, the simplest point is that if time travel were real, I suspect that, I mean, we'd see people from the future coming back and interfering, and we don't. So, honestly, no. I mean, I wish I could say yes, but no, I don't think so.
And I tend to think that what has happened in the past is gone. It's, you know, it's almost like life is on a tape recorder or video machine, but it's not that way. And, you know, when an event occurs, it's over with, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you can't affect the past. I mean, you can't affect the future. So, you know, one-way time travel is okay. But, yeah, to the past, I don't think so.
What about the speed of light? Are we going to find anything faster than light?
You know, that's a tough one. I mean, I'm in the business of trying to break the laws of physics as we understand them.
Right.
According to what we know now, you know, there's no way that we're going to go faster than the speed of light. And we've certainly tried. We have particle beams that are going at near the speed of light, and then you hit it, you goose it, give it more energy, and you think it might go faster, but it doesn't. It goes just a little bit closer to the speed of light, but never breaks it. So if we're going to go faster than the speed of light, it's going to require something new. It's going to take a new Einstein to figure out how to do that. So, you know, the short answer is we have no evidence that it's going to work, but, you know, you never say never in my business.
No, you can't, but there's so many fascinating possibilities that are out there, to be sure. The law of physics seems to hold up no matter where you are in the universe. Is it different in other spots, or is it all the same?
To the best of our knowledge, it's the same everywhere, and it's not that we're just kind of guessing that. We can look out billions of light years away at galaxies, and we can see what kind of light they're emitting. We can see how they rotate by looking at the gravity. And from what we can measure for these things that are billions of light years away, that's billions of years ago, they seem to be operating by exactly the same laws we have here on Earth. So that's pretty amazing.
Some believe that we're living in a simulation, that we're really not here. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually working on a little project on that. So the hypothesis there is that, you know, someday in the far future, we'll be able to have computers that are so strong, that we'll be able to simulate realities and sort of figure out what's going on. We could, like, take you and me you know, put it in a simulation, and then one time we'll have one conversation, another time we'll have another conversation. And with big computers, you can do this, you know, thousands, millions, billions of times. And so the philosopher that was talking about this said, well, if you can have that many simulations, then, and there's only one true reality, then the odds are that we are actually in a simulation, which, you know, I think is a case of philosophy gone a little crazy. However, you know, that's a question we can actually try to ask and answer that. You know, if you've ever looked at your really close at your TV, you see that it's made of little pixels.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there is a smallest piece of the TV. And if there's a simulation, there's a smallest piece of reality. And we've actually went and looked for the smallest piece of reality. And so far, we see no evidence for this. So if I was a betting man, and I am on this, I'd bet pretty good money that we're not in a simulation.
I would bet with you, because the scientists that think we are, they've never stubbed their little toe, have they?
Exactly.
Let's take some calls for you. Let's go to Kettering, Ohio. Mark's with us to get things started. Hey, Mark, go ahead.
Hey, George.
Hi.
Back in again. Oh, by the way, I'm the guy that criticized you playing ABBA tune. You know, that's about a year ago or so. And feel free to play ABBA again. Waterloo, especially. You remember that one?
Oh, yeah. Love those songs.
Yeah. And at Creedence Clearwater, I wish you'd put on Green River sometime.
Alrighty.
You remember those guys? Yeah. Yeah, so I'm giving away how old I am. Anyway, yeah, I missed his name. George, forgive me. I know it's Don, but what?
Don Lincoln, our physicist
Lincoln,
and scientist.
I assume he's a PhD in particle physics or something.
Senior scientist, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a physicist of some type. He's probably a government man. He doesn't want to give away what he's doing. Yeah, being a former Navy guy like you, you know, I know what. Anyway, Doctor, You know, Albert Einstein once said that God wouldn't play dice with the universe. And with my way of thinking, again, I'm a biologist, not a physicist, that progresses into entropy. And the fact that the universe, you know, everything wants to go apart. You'll fly apart, you know, like a watch blowing up or something. And my vision of God assume, yeah, assume the proper word probably, a static universe, a universe that, you know, and when he said you wouldn't want to play dice, or God wouldn't play dice with the universe, it's like a roulette wheel, you know, you throw it, it gets in the, you know, that derives from quantum mechanics, of course, you're aware of that, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, you know, it never made sense to me that a perfect God would create, create something that looks like, you know, looks like a roulette wheel going round and around.
There's got to be some divine intelligence in here somewhere, though, Don, don't you think? Whatever it is?
This is a personal opinion? No, I don't think so. And I don't think Einstein, you know, Einstein was known for using words like, you know, God doesn't play dice and he wants to know God's thoughts. But when you actually listen to his writings, he didn't believe in that kind of God, the sort of, you know, the guy up there with, you know, lightning bolts and watching you and making sure things are going right. He believed in what he meant by God was sort of the physical laws, the God of Spinoza, the law of the natural universe. And so to answer your guest's question, I don't presume to have any knowledge about God's thoughts if God does exist, and I certainly don't understand the details of the laws of the universe, or I'd be out of a job, and that's something I'm looking to understand. Quantum mechanics is absolutely, without a doubt, a weird thing. It, you know, if you're not confused by quantum mechanics, you didn't understand the explanation, because it blows your mind. It's just craziness. But then again, the universe is not, you know, it's not beholden to me. It doesn't have to make sense in the way that makes sense to me. It's my job to understand it, not, you know, to have it conform to what I think it should be.
And we're, what, about 4.5 billion years old, our solar system?
Yeah, ballpark.
And our sun will technically burn out when?
Well, in about a billion years, it's going to get really hot in the inside, and that's when it'll puff up into that red giant, become big enough to almost or maybe definitely encompass the Earth. The Earth will burn into a big cinder. And then that'll happen, you know, for ballpark a billion years, a little bit less or so. And then it'll burn out and it will collapse back in on itself and will be this white dwarf. The white dwarf will then last for a very long time, tens of billions of years. It will slowly die like the embers in a grill after the steaks are done.
Assuming there's intelligent life still on the planet, during that period, as the sun begins to change, what do they feel? What do they see? Or is it gradual, or does it just happen like that?
No. It'll grow slowly. It'll slow on human scales, fast on astronomical scales.
Right.
And what they'll do is, you know, if they're intelligent life, and hopefully they have some good technology, then that'd be a good time to get the heck out of Dodge and, you know, move out to the outer solar system, or, you know, hopefully by that time we'll be able to go to other solar systems, because, you know, when the sun does that, the Earth will melt, it'll disappear. So, you know, it's not a good place for us to be.
No. If they learn how to bend space and time, they may be able to get out of Dodge.
But so many years in the future, by that time, even if they've got, you know, technology that isn't much more than ours, and I can't imagine that, but let's say they don't, you know, they make big ships and then just, you know, travel to other stars. But, you know, hopefully we got some, you know, Starship Enterprise or Millennium Falcon, and we just buzz on over there and, you know, get to safety.
When I was in like third or fourth grade, one of our teachers would always tell us the sun was going to burn out in a billion plus years, and I'd go home crying all the time. And my dad would say, George, it's a billion years from now. Don't worry about it. And I said, yeah, but Dad, it's going to burn out. We won't be here. And, you know, he didn't have the heart to tell me, you're not going to be here anyway. Don't worry.
True.
Next up, let's go to Laura in St. Cloud, Minnesota, first-time caller. Hello, Laura.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a very interesting conversation. I'm American, and I'm an allied. And I would like to mention the satellites and International Space Station. I learned in school that anything that goes into outer space destroys the atmosphere, which caused a coronavirus. If they demolished the satellites and space station, the disease would go away.
Who taught you this, Laura?
As science, economics in high school.
I don't think that's the case, Don. I don't think our COVID was created because of satellites.
No, I mean, the chemistry doesn't allow for that. I mean, well, for one thing, the satellites don't interact with the atmosphere, so the satellites surrounding the Earth just, you know, can't do anything. Now, in all fairness, you have to shoot the satellites into space. So you have rocket ships, and the rocket ships have exhaust and things like that. But as you said earlier, life is incredibly complex. It's not just something that happens easily. And then, you know, the exhaust from rockets is just basically, it's not exactly, but it's kind of like gasoline burning, and it gets hot, and it shoots out the hot gases, which pushes the rockets into space. So I can say with absolute certainty that the coronavirus, or for that matter, any viruses, are not made either by launching rockets nor by rocket or satellites being up there. That is, it is just not true.
George is with us in Corpus Christi, Texas. Hey, George.
Hello, George. Hi. I have a quick question.
Sure thing.
For Mr. Lincoln. Is it Dr. Lincoln or just Mr. Lincoln?
Either one.
Oh, Mr. Lincoln. We're talking about black holes, and I've been fascinated. But I get all my information. I told George before, I'm not a researcher, but I with all his wonderful guests on, he's had physics, PhDs, doctors, you name it, and he covers the mind, body, and soul, and now in outer space. So my question is about black holes. Since they're like giant vacuums, you know, if you think about it, they're sucking in everything, and light doesn't escape. Do they reach a point where they finally blow up and create another galaxy, or maybe for that matter, another universe? And that's my question, and I'll listen on the radio.
Okay, a good question. Go ahead, Don.
It is a good question. So there's two things. When people talk about black holes, they do think of it as like vacuum cleaners. But, you know, black holes don't, like, reach out and grab stuff. I mean, if you were to replace the sun with a black hole with the same mass, the Earth would still orbit. Of course, it would be dark and, you know, it would be cold and we'd all die. But the sun would continue to orbit and it wouldn't get sucked into the black hole. So that's a bit of a misnomer. However, things do fall in black holes, and when they do, the black holes get bigger, and they get bigger and bigger. But it's not that they get bigger and then sometime get unstable and then blow up or turn into a new universe or a new galaxy or something like that. In fact, if you look out into space, I mean, black holes are made initially by stars exploding, but then black holes can coalesce and get to be bigger and bigger. There are black holes at the center of our universe, the center of our galaxy has a black hole that is, I forget, it's like 5 or 6 million times bigger than the sun, or not bigger, but heavier than the sun. So that's a case of a black hole with a huge mass, much, much bigger than a star. And there are much bigger black holes out there. There are black holes that are billions of times the mass of the sun. And what happens is they just simply get bigger and bigger and bigger, but they don't explode. Now, a guy by the name of Stephen Hawking, very smart guy, he realized that if you wait forever, and forever, I just mean a super, super long time, black holes will slowly evaporate. And, it's like ice on a windy, sunny day where the ice will slowly disappear, sublimate, not melt, but disappear. And so on the very, very long term, black holes will slowly fade away, but you're never going to get any sort of explosion or creation of a new galaxy or anything like that.
Is it possible, Don, that the universe isn't 14 billion years old, but 25 billion years old?
Not in any, you know, not according to any measurements that we've ever made. Our understanding of the age of the universe, it's actually quite precise. And, you know, this is not just a little bit of data going into it. It's a crazy amount of data.
Mm-hmm.
When I say 14 billion years, it's actually more precise than that. It's like 13.72 plus or minus 0.02 billion years. I mean, we know this really quite precisely.
Can we see with Hubble or any other kind of telescope the first light of the Big Bang?
No.
We can't go back that far yet.
No, so the Hubble Space Telescope can only see back to about 400 million years.
Oh, that's all. Okay.
Yeah. So there's another space telescope going up, hopefully soon, where soon might be a year or so, called the James Webb Space Telescope. And
right.
That will be able to look back to 200 million years after the Big Bang. Now, if the farthest back we can actually look, there's this thing called the cosmic microwave background radiation. And you see this using radio waves. And that can look as far back as about 380,000 years after the Big Bang. But we've never looked before that. So everything that we understand about the universe from time equals zero to about 380,000 years after the Big Bang is not from observation in space. It's by taking particle accelerators and smashing things together and finding out what matter acts like under those very, very hot temperatures. So that's what I do. And so that is the linkage between particle physics and cosmology. They can look in space and see how our universe evolves, and we can recreate the conditions of the Big Bang and try to understand and fill in the gaps that you can't see by looking into space.
Theoretically, if we could get back to the point of the Big Bang by visually seeing it, what would we see? Would everything be pitch black, or would there be a little tiny thing that would be lit up? What do you think it would look like?
You mean before
the explosion?
Like before?
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing with the Big Bang is people have this sort of, I mean, in very smart people, I don't mean to insult anybody, have this misconception that the Big Bang is like a firecracker or a grenade or something.
Or a flashlight.
Like, well, maybe that too. But a lot of people think that the universe, they think it was very small, all the matter of the universe was in this tiny spot and it blew up. And so, you know, the whole firecracker idea is pretty sensible. But that's not what modern science thinks. What modern science thinks is that even before the Big Bang, the universe was probably even infinite prior to that. Everything was just smaller. And so when we talk about the universe being a single point, what we mean is all of the matter, all of the visible matter that we can see now, which is in this huge sphere centered on the Earth, all of that was much, much smaller, compressed to tiny size. But if you went back to before the Big Bang, that universe would be infinite too. So what happened is the universe was infinite then, and in the Big Bang, it just stretched. So, you know, think of like a rubber band that's not stretched but goes on forever. And that's like the universe before the Big Bang. Then you start stretching the rubber band, and eventually you get to be now. So in both cases, before the Big Bang and after the Big Bang, it's infinite. But now it's infinite and stretched, and before it was infinite and not stretched.
Interesting take on all of that. And how do people see you on YouTube?
Yes.
How do they get to you?
Make YouTube videos, and if you look at youtube.com/Fermilab, Fermilab is the laboratory that I do my research at, and we have a lot of videos. I've got 100-some-odd videos of all matters of particle physics and cosmology, some science, and some bad dad jokes. It's worth your...
Okay, we're going to come back and take final calls with you, Don, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Scott Mitchell joins us, who's going to talk about fallen angels and ETs and a great deception, so I'm looking forward to that. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Don Lincoln with us, as we're talking about science of the universe. It's just fascinating. Were you into this, Don, when you were in school?
Yeah, I've always been interested in this sort of stuff. I mean, mostly, though, when I was a kid, I started out with science fiction, and, you know, it's a gateway drug to the big stuff, the real science.
What was it when you were a boy that fascinated you? And I bet you had a telescope when you were a kid, too, didn't you?
I did, but, you know, I always found them frustrating because it was, you know, one of those cheap ones that, you know, you look at something and as soon as you look at it, it goes out of the field of view.
It keeps moving.
yeah. You know, but the thing that fascinated me both, it's actually the stuff that bugs people. So, you know, you hear about Einstein's relativity, clocks are slowing down and things are shrinking, or quantum mechanics where cats are alive or dead. And when I was a kid, I thought, you know, this is all nonsense. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. And I was going to be a scientist and figure out how the, you know, these guys who came up with these ideas were wrong. And then after I spent some time understanding and looking at the information and so forth, you know, I realized that those old guys were pretty smart after all. But by that time I was hooked and I wanted to learn more about the laws of the universe.
What have you not done in science that you would like to do?
I'd like to, you know, make some discovery that really changes how we understand the universe. But of course, discoveries like that are, you know, part, a lot of perspiration, as they say, part
sure.
inspiration, but an awful lot of luck. And, you know, some people, they just stumble into the answer. So we keep looking and, you know, I got a few more years left. Hopefully I will find something that makes us completely rethink the world. And if not, well, you know, I'll at least have helped a little bit, make us understand it a little bit better.
With Einstein's brain, had he had computers like we have today, what do you think he might have accomplished?
You know, it's a tough one because Einstein, you know, he had his insights, his advances were not so much his ability to calculate, because Einstein was only a modest calculator. He actually needed help from other people who were better mathematicians to do that. His big thing was his imagination, his ability to look at the problem in ways differently than other people did and come up with a new idea. So I actually think that the computers would not help him all that much, because that wasn't his big thing. His big thing was the neat ideas. And it's important to remember that as impressive as Einstein was, he was also wrong for a lot, you know, the last sort of 30 years of his life. He spent a lot of time trying to work out ideas that we now can prove aren't true. In fact, you know, while he did figure out a whole bunch about relativity and he fought people about quantum mechanics, he completely ignored the forces that hold together the nucleus of atoms. He just didn't deal with those things. And when you don't deal with data, you're bound to go down a wrong path.
Is it safe to say that somebody from his era who was more mathematically inclined, had they had a computer, that would have blown right past Albert?
It's tough. You need both. You need the skills, the mathematical skills, to figure out what the ideas mean. But you need the ideas to begin with. So what you really need is a powerhouse, you know, computer person, whether it be a person with pen and pencil and good math skills or can program a computer. But you need the idea guy or gal to make it all happen. So, you know, what you really need is both, I think.
Does E equals MC square, his formula, basically come down to the atomic bomb?
It doesn't come down to it, but they agree with, one implies the other. I mean, what the atomic bomb is, the conversion of matter into energy, but, you know, it means other things too.
Sure, absolutely. Mike in Denver, it's your turn, Michael. Go ahead.
Well, good morning, George. Thank you so much for taking my call tonight. And Mr. Lincoln, first of all, I wanted to thank you for your work and research with the Hadron Collider in Europe. That's really interesting stuff. And on a personal note, I really appreciate what you do with that. So thank you. I had a comment and question on the Arecibo Observatory tonight. So the Arecibo Observatory, which was recently announced it was shutting down, has the world's most powerful planetary radar system. And what that does is it provides ground-based observations of different solar systems, and it can also track meteorites. And there was a program back in 2011 called NASA's Near-Earth Object Observations Program. And what this did is it was actually able to – they were able to use this program to track meteors and asteroids. And, you know, obviously the Arecibo Observatory closing is a huge loss, along with these programs that go with it. But, you know, my question, Don, is what do you make of this planetary observation system that they're able to track meteorites and asteroids and kind of the general loss of the Arecibo Observatory in general. Thank you.
Well, certainly Arecibo is a loss. It's an iconic, it's an iconic observatory, and it's beautiful. There are, however, other facilities. I mean, there's the Grand Array out in Socorro, New Mexico. China has a radar array. So there are other facilities like that. In addition, the near-Earth orbits, I mean, you have people using optical telescopes just looking for little dots moving across the sky. And there are both professional and amateurs doing that. I personally think it's very, very important because as you, the reason that we worry about these near-Earth objects is there are meteors. Meteors do hit the Earth, and it is possible for them to do a lot of damage. There was the impact, I don't know, a decade or so ago at Chelyabinsk in the Ukraine. There was Tunguska back at the turn of the 20th centuries. And then, of course, 65 million years ago, there was the big one that hit Shishaloub in Mexico and, killed the dinosaurs and set mammals on their path to the dominance that we have now. It's not a question of if the Earth will be hit again. The question is when. And so it's important for us to look out into space and see if something's heading our way. If there is, you know, I'm not sure exactly what we do about it. You have, movies that say, well, we could go out and redirect the asteroid so it doesn't hit the Earth. But key to all of this is early warning. So I absolutely want to see people continue to look into space and see when that bullet is coming. So hopefully we can duck the bullet.
Absolutely. Next up, we've got Dora in Jersey City, New Jersey. Good morning, Dora.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Mr. Lincoln. Right? Lincoln?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Lincoln, I want that you, what I'm going to tell you, I want that, tell me the explanation. I am Cuban. I am not supposed to talk about ghosts. To me, it's energy. So here is the memory. Okay, I rent two places in Hollywood. The two places that I rent, a storage in 72, and I want a house, so I got the house in 76. The two places have to do with Elvis Presley, the next one. So I will be the girl next door of the two. Since he died, everything went wrong in the two places. The same day, okay, inside show up energy and a ghost, so people understand, with a turban. And he talked to me, but I never saw Presley with a turban. So he say in one time, he say, I'm going to take the middle of your last middle name. Okay, my name is Dora Adele, is an A. He say he will take the A with him. Okay, I will tell you later about the A. Now, in the house, he say he's going to give me a car in the house and in the storage. I say, I don't want a car. Well, the dead man gave me the car, sir. He told me where to go and talk to the person. And when I was crying in my house, he say, why you cry? I say, because nobody's going to believe it. So he say, well, tell it to the ones don't believe it. So I am telling that to you right now. He say, divide the name of the model of the car in three. So get a pencil, sir, and divide. The car was Cadillac El Dorado 55. Divide El Dorado in three. Don't you get my name there?
Yep, we got your name, Dora, to be sure. Now, that's a scientific breakthrough for you there, Don.
Actually, that was I heard a lot of static on that. Could you...
No, there's no way I can repeat that.
No.
But We'll move on to another call. Dora, thank you for that. Appreciate it. Let's go to Gary in Sebring, Florida. Gary, take it away. Welcome to the program.
Welcome. Thank you. I was a rocket scientist at one time, but so I was smart a long, long time ago. But anyhow, I studied E is equal to mc squared, and that all energy and mass are just different forms of the same thing. And it seems to me that with the Big Bang, I always ask people, if the Big Bang was the theory that of the creation of the universe, where did they get the stuff to create the Big Bang? And I would say that I think Don maybe has probably created a little bit of antimatter, maybe. Have you done that, Don?
Absolutely. Antimatter is something that we make all the time. It's a routine thing. But to answer your question, where did the energy come from? I mean, we have to be honest. Scientists don't know.
They don't know that. And they may never have that answer.
Well, they may not, but that's the goal. We hope we will understand, but we don't know where the energy came from. And, you know, we do understand a lot about the Big Bang. We understand what happened to about a tenth of a trillionth of a second after it began. But if you ask before that time, it's really speculation. And it's fair to ask the question. It's a good question. I wish I had an answer for you. But if I told you I knew the answer, I'd be lying.
What if a sophisticated, intelligent alien race that was millions of years ahead of us in knowledge came by and told us they discovered the answers? You think we'd accept that?
You know, maybe. It depends on if we could verify sort of things. I mean, you know, Reagan said trust but verify in a different context, and the same thing would happen here. If someone came and told me, I have an answer and here is the answer, and it was something I could test and see that they're right, then I would accept it. If it was something beyond our technology, then we would put it in the, you know, we think it's possible. Like people talk about, you know, ideas generated here on Earth that at the smallest level, the universe isn't made of particles, but little vibrating strings. Now, this is something we can't test. And so we would put that in the, gee, I don't know, but maybe category. Same thing with what the aliens said. If the aliens had an idea, you know, if we couldn't test it, we would just table it and see if we could develop the technology to see if they were right.
Is it conceivable that the universe always was?
Yes, yes. In fact, that is a completely viable hypothesis. We talked a little while ago about what happened, you know, before the Big Bang. And if the universe, I mean, one idea, and it's a completely reasonable idea, is the universe did exist before the Big Bang, although the idea of time is tricky before that, it was just very compressed. And then the moment of the Big Bang is when it just started expanding rapidly. So yes, I mean, this compressed universe could have lasted, you know, been forever. We have to be careful, though, because when you compress matter like would have had to happen there, the concept of time gets very, very fuzzy. So we, you know, it's tricky to talk about before if you can't define time well. But, you know, ignoring that, it is possible the universe always was. Just, you know, we're going from compressed to not compressed.
So the universe was around about 10 billion years before our solar system came into existence. Is there anything behind us coming into existence?
Well, you know, we're not special in the sense that there's nothing truly magical about Earth. I mean, other than the fact that we live here and it's a nice place to live.
It's our nice home.
You know, but galaxies evolve and live and die. There's gas clouds out there that then collapse into stars. The stars come into existence and build new planets. So if we were to be able to live for 5 or 10 billion years, what we would see is we would see other stars
that were younger than us.
That are absolutely there are stars being built and coming in to starting their life right now. That happens, and that will continue to happen for the future.
It'll never end, will it?
Well, eventually the fuel will run out. There will be a point where no more stars will be built. I mean, we're talking now, you know, 100 billion years in the future or something like that, where the galaxies will slowly die out, and there will be, the universe will be a kind of a sad and dark place.
You're like my science teacher, Don. You're going to make me cry again till I run home to my parents. But thank you, Don. It's always great talking to you. Let's not let 3 years go by next time. Up next, Fallen Angels. Is there a great deception?